Good afternoon. I'm Mary Crossley. I'm the Dean of the Law School, and it is a true honor and a great pleasure today to welcome the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces, our advocates today, and everyone who is here in attendance to observe the court's proceedings. For me, and I think for a lot of the faculty and the students here, one of the great fringe benefits of either going to law school or working in a law school environment is that it seems like there are always interesting people who are coming onto campus to speak about a variety of different stimulating and thought-provoking ideas, and that's great, but it's far rarer to have the opportunity that we have today, because no matter how dynamic the speakers are, typically they're talking about something, and the opportunity that we have today is to actually see here at the law school, to see the law in action by observing the court's proceedings. And so on behalf of the law school, I certainly want to thank the court for making a trip to the law school and to Pittsburgh part of its judicial outreach program. It's, I think, a special event any time that we are fortunate at the law school to have a federal court of appeals coming to the school and hearing arguments. But I think it's an extra special event today because of some of the connections between the Pitt Law community and the military justice system that we actually have here today at the law school. I would like to welcome back to the law school Major John Page, who is one of the advocates who will be arguing today, who is an alum of Pitt Law School in the class of 1998. And so we welcome back Major Page. Another connection that we have is that the Pitt Law student who will be arguing as an amicus in the case, Carrie Scheibold, following graduation will be going into the Army JAG Corps. And the law school is certainly proud of its many graduates who serve the public and serve our country, but we're particularly proud today that you can be part of this event. So without further ado, I will turn the proceedings over to the clerk of the court, Mr. DeSico.
Just a few administrative remarks before we get started. First of all, there's a summary of the case in the handout that's in the back for your review. Also, there's another pamphlet there on our court, and on the back cover is the address of our court's website, so you can check that in the future for the opinion that comes out in this case, United States versus Levy. I wanted to also go over the order of oral argument today. Each side has been allotted 30 minutes to argue. The student amicus has been allotted 10 minutes. The appellant, Major Page, who represents David Leedy, will argue first. He has reserved 5 of his 30 minutes for rebuttal, so he will argue for 25 minutes. Following Major Page, Carrie Scheibel will argue for 10 minutes as amicus supporting the appellant. Following her, Major Ward will argue for the government for 30 minutes, and following him, Major Page will get his 5 minutes for rebuttal. So that'll be the order of oral argument. And if everybody uses all their time, it should take about 70 minutes. So following the argument, I wanted to mention there will be a question and answer session. The judges will remain in place after we gavel the court to a close. They will remain there and take any questions you may have about this court, the military justice system, the process, etc. The only restriction is that they will not be able to answer any questions about this case, because that would be under advisement. Okay, so, and you can ask them, but they won't answer. Also, I want to remind you to turn off electrical devices, cell phones, pagers, please. Photography is okay, except the judges would like you to restrict it to the very beginning of the argument, and then after the argument, not take it during the middle of the argument, because it can be a little disruptive. But there will be ample opportunity for photography following the argument. Okay, are there any questions on anything? Okay. All rise. the Chief Judge and the Associate Judges of the United States Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable the United States Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces is now open and in session. God save the United States of America and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good afternoon. Today, the United States Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces meets at the University of Pittsburgh School of Law as part of our Project Outreach program. We are honored and privileged to be here. Today, your moot courtroom is transformed into a federal courthouse. We will now proceed with the case of the United States against Leedy. Defense, you may proceed.
May it please the court, Chief Judge Efron, honorable judges of this court, good afternoon. I'm Major John Page, and along with Captain John Fredland, we represent the appellant in this case, Airman First Class David Leedy. The military judge abused her discretion in this case by refusing to suppress evidence that was taken from appellant's personal computer because the magistrate did not have a substantial basis for finding probable cause to grant search authorization to the Air Force Office of Special Investigations Agent Spring. The military judge also erred in this case by determining that the good faith exception to the exclusionary rule applied because the affidavit from Special Agent Spring was facially deficient. Now, in this case, the military magistrate did not have information to meaningfully examine whether the file in question falls within the definition of child pornography. The reason that's so important in a case like this is because the existence of criminal conduct often depends solely on the nature of the file or the image in question. For example, in United States versus Roderick, this court examined what are commonly referred to as the DOST factors, six different factors that are looked at in determining whether an image constitutes a lascivious exhibition. For example, the setting of the image, what the focal point of the image is. And in this case, the military magistrate did not have any information to make that type of a searching analysis.
Counsel, in terms of that searching analysis, do you believe that it is always necessary that the photo itself be viewed at, and that it could never be the case that the names of the files is sufficient?
Your Honor, it's not. The requirement is not that the actual image itself always be included in the application for search authorization. There's almost a hierarchy, if you will, of information that the courts tend to prefer that are provided in the search, the application for search authorization. The picture itself tends to be, for example, the First Circuit Court of Appeals in Brunette emphasized that ideally the court would like to have the image actually attached for the magistrate so that he can examine the picture. But recognizing that the magistrate is not required to consider the actual picture in question, the courts have also made clear that a detailed description of the image can also be adequate.
Right, and I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
That doesn't really answer my question, at least I don't think it does, about whether it could ever be sufficient just the file name, or whether you would have to have a description of what was within the file.
Your Honor, under the totality of the circumstances analysis, there may be situations where the file name has adequate description in it, such that could potentially form a basis for a substantial basis for a probable cause analysis.
Without having seen the image, how can they be more specific?
Well, in this particular case, Your Honor, that certainly is a problem that the government has to overcome in a sense in this case. I mean, there was really no effort made to determine what the nature of the file was in this case. There was no additional investigative efforts to try to determine whether this was even an image to begin with. As the special agent acknowledged, on Windows Media Player, you can have audio files in addition to video files, and so there was really nothing presented to the magistrate to indicate that, to begin with, that this was an actual image that we're dealing with here.
What's the relationship between the statement of Winkler and the affidavit? The statement, for example, refers to movies and has a different title for one of the files. Does the statement play into the probable cause analysis?
The written statement from Airman Winkler, Your Honor?
That's correct.
That raises an important point, Your Honor, because the case law makes clear that what the courts should be analyzing is the actual information that was presented to the magistrate at the time that he made the probable cause determination. And in this case,
let's dissect that. So are you saying that if the statement or the information contained within it was provided to the magistrate, then those facts are relevant?
That had been presented to the magistrate, yes, Your Honor.
Okay. What indication do we have that this information was provided either in the form of the statement or in the form of the information to the magistrate?
Your Honor, from the record of trial, the magistrate issued his search authorization on the 14th of March, and the written statement from Airman Winkler was written after that search authorization was granted on approximately the 17th of March. So that statement was not presented to...
But what about the information contained within the statement? For example, the statement says that the list was movies and not just files. Is there anything in the record that would indicate that that information was provided to the magistrate, either by reasonable inference or, in fact, a statement saying it was provided to the magistrate?
Your Honor, based on the record of trial, really the only thing that, at least in the search affidavit itself, it mentioned that Airman Winkler saw some files that he believed to be pornographic in nature, but he could only remember a limited number of actual names of files.
But let me try it a different way. Did the magistrate testify that he had a 20 to 30 minute conversation with the special agent?
Yes, Your Honor.
And do we know from that or reasonable inference whether this additional information that is contained in the statement but not in the affidavit was presented to the magistrate?
We would submit that the record does not support that, Your Honor.
Does it support, do you know that, or is that, you don't think that's a fair inference?
We would submit that it's not a fair inference from the record, Your Honor, as to whether or not some of these file names constituted videos.
Let me ask that a little more, a little differently. In the magistrate's testimony at the suppression hearing and in Special Agent Spring's testimony at the suppression hearing, did either one of them discuss the contents of the 20 to 30 minute discussion that they had, and specifically did they discuss what Spring had seen that was not in his affidavit?
What Agent Spring had seen, Your Honor, or Airman Winkler?
I think this is Spring's affidavit. Didn't Spring make a statement to the OSI that I can't see any reference that the statement that he made to the OSI that was attached to the CCA, I believe it was to the CCA. No, it was. I'm trying to remember, where was that affidavit attached?
The written statement from Airman Winkler, Your Honor, was included. It was an attachment to the defense motion to suppress at trial. But from the record itself, there's no indication that actual written statement was ever provided to the military magistrate.
Okay, yeah, you're right. It's Winkler, not Winkler's, not Springs. Okay.
Then specifically, what statements were made to the magistrate? And what's that were covered in the document subsequently executed, and what statements in the document that was subsequently executed were not provided to the magistrate, or which the record does not indicate were provided to the magistrate? Not speculation, not inferences. From the testimony of the magistrate, what did he know that was in the subsequently executed statement, and what was not covered in the subsequently executed statement?
Yes, Your Honor. What the magistrate was aware of, based on the testimony during the motion hearing, was that there were a series of files observed by Airman Winkler that he believed to be pornographic in nature, one of which was entitled 14-year-old Filipino girl, and the other, which was entitled, I believe it was Three White Guys and a Black Girl.
Well, that's one of the issues, is there's a different title in his statement.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the one question is whether that different title was provided to the magistrate. I think we're all, I will speak for myself, we're trying to get at whether that additional information was provided to the magistrate and how we judge whether it was by fair inference or not.
I submit that it was not provided to the magistrate, Your Honor, just based on the testimony from the motion hearing and based on the contents of the search affidavit.
What specifically was not provided to the magistrate, or to put it a different way, what specific information in that subsequent statement do we know that the magistrate did not expressly identify as being before him in the magistrate's testimony?
Yes, Your Honor. As Judge Baker had alluded to, there was, with respect to the file, Three White Guys and a Black Girl, there was additional information about the title of that particular file that the record does not support was provided to the magistrate. Additionally, in the written statement, Airman Winkler referenced seeing titles that were describing different ages and different acts, and the record does not support, the record does not indicate that the military magistrate had that particular aspect of Airman Winkler's statement to consider.
And at the proceeding before the military judge, whose obligation was it to bring out whether the information contained in the subsequently executed statement was before the magistrate? Was it the government's burden or the defense burden at that point? The evidence has been introduced at that point without objection?
The actual statement itself, Your Honor?
Right.
Yes, Your Honor.
So the evidence is introduced without objection. Whose obligation is at that point to straighten out this question as to what the magistrate knew at the time the magistrate authorized the search? Is it with the defense or is it with the government?
Your Honor, the trial defense counsel at that point really should have been the one that was clarifying it for the military judge.
Pardon?
The trial defense counsel, Your Honor, at that point should have been clarifying it for the military judge.
So the burden was on the defense at that point since the government had introduced it. So is there a reason why at this stage we can't review the record as containing all of the information that was presented at trial to the military judge when she was reviewing what the magistrate had considered?
The reason we submit that this court should not, Your Honor, is just based on precedent in the case law, just establishing that really the focus of the review of the magistrate's decision should just be focused on the actual information that's provided to him.
Right, but you just told us that it was the defense burden to clarify matters. So here we are at trial. Military judge is sitting there trying to figure out whether this is a lawful search or not. The government introduces the evidence of what the magistrate said, and the government also introduces this subsequently executed statement, and the defense does nothing at that point to suggest that any of the information in the subsequently executed statement was not before the military judge. So why can't we look at that record under those circumstances? What case law tells us that we should not consider that information as being before the military, as being before the magistrate at the time that the magistrate authorized the search?
Your Honor, I'm not aware of a particular case law that indicates that this court should not consider that. However, just based on what is in the record, however, indicating that the search authorization was granted on the 14th of March, and the statement being written on the 17th of March, and there being no indication in the record that those particular items were conveyed to the magistrate, we would respect.
All the defense counsel had to say at that point was to ask the witness who executed the statement, or to ask the magistrate, does this conform with what was before the magistrate at the time he made the decision? having not asked that question, and if the burden is on the defense at that point to clarify, why isn't the defense stuck with everything that was introduced at trial?
Well, Your Honor, the during the motion hearing itself, and I don't during the testimony from the military magistrate and during the testimony from Special Agent Spring, we would submit that through the questioning from the trial defense counsel that it was sufficiently established that the information that was being conveyed to the magistrate was what was within the search authorization or the search affidavit itself.
Is it essential for your case for you to exclude consideration of everything from the subsequently executed statement, or can you argue based upon the assumption that without conceding that that evidence was before the magistrate that it was still insufficient?
Your Honor, we don't believe it's dispositive to the outcome of the case.
Why?
Well, primarily because, I mean, there still needs to be, Your Honor, an examination of based on the totality of the circumstances of whether or not there's a substantial basis for search authorization. And
can you be clear, are you arguing then that if everything that's in the statement doesn't come in, you think there's no probable cause? So he says he sees a list of movies, they're pornographic, they detail ages of subjects and acts, there's one which has a particular phrase that is pretty indicative of sex of some sort, and within this list is a file, a title called 14-year-old Filipino girl, and on that basis, why is that not sufficient for probable cause? Are you arguing that it's not, right?
It certainly makes it a stronger case for the government, Your Honor. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
Well, are you conceding the case then?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. What's your argument?
Your Honor, even if that information was included to the magistrate, we still don't have, obviously, actual images themselves, and we don't have anything that actually providing a detailed description of the images either.
Okay, well, in a case like this, the only way to get the actual images would be to violate the Fourth Amendment by having the roommate, you know, go into his roommate's computer and print off images, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So are you suggesting, and this goes back to the question I asked you at the very beginning, that titles are not sufficient? And I thought that you said that under the totality of the circumstances that they could be, irrespective of whether you have the actual images or have the actual photos to provide to the magistrate, right?
There could be cases, Your Honor, where if the title itself provides sufficient information indicating what the content of the file is, that may be a situation where you could establish probable cause.
Isn't this such a case? If this additional stuff comes in?
We would submit that it's not, Your Honor.
That in and of itself isn't graphic enough? To at least, I'm not saying, we're not talking about the legal definition of child pornography here. We're talking about whether it amounts to probable cause, whether it's enough to get in there.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, as I mentioned, Your Honor, it does certainly make it a much stronger case for the government. But that being the case, still, going under what the case law is generally preferred in terms of a detailed description, I mean, this particular case was lacking.
We're not talking about what's preferable. We're talking about whether this meets a fairly minimal standard.
Yes, Your Honor. The problem is, even if information from the written statement had still gone to the magistrate and there was an indication that some of these files were video files, We still don't necessarily know, 14-year-old Filipino girl, what the particular nature of that file was.
No, but in context.
Yes, Your Honor.
Can I ask you a question about that, the title issue? Do you have a position as to whether or not we can give any weight, or the magistrate can give any weight, to the experience and training of the special agent involved in this case?
That's something that the magistrate can certainly take into consideration, Your Honor.
Okay, and so if you have someone who has investigated and had training in this particular area, and if it is if he believes it is a case which is not, you know, based on his experience, that files named like these files were named turn out, or often turn out to be photos, pornographic photos of children, is that something that the magistrate can't consider?
You can't consider that, Your Honor, but at the end of the day, it has to be the magistrate that's drawing the evidentiary inferences from what's being presented. And part of the problem in this case, and why we would submit that the magistrate in this case, his decision should not be afforded the substantial deference that's typically given to a magistrate's decision, is because from the testimony during the motion hearing, it was clear that Special Agent Spring was the one that was essentially making the evidentiary inferences in this case as to what these file titles actually consisted of. And it was Special Agent Spring oftentimes relying on the inferences that were provided by Airman Winkler, the informant, as to what these images in particular likely constituted. So because one of the key aspects of the protections of the Fourth Amendment is they have that neutral and detached magistrate making the drawing the evidentiary inferences, that because that you don't have that in this case, we would submit that the magistrate's decision in this case should be afforded much less deference than ordinary.
The magistrate spent half an hour with the guy. He called the commander to make sure there was no personal animosity between these two airmen that might give rise to a false report. He calls the legal office and talks to a JAG. And you're saying that's not the actions of a neutral and detached magistrate who's taking what seems to be substantial care over what he realizes is an important decision?
Yes, Your Honor. We would submit that those matters were more peripheral matters, and that what the magistrate was not focusing at here was the crux of the matter as to whether or not there was some likelihood that this actually constituted child pornography. And so during his testimony, he was asked, in particular on page 59 of the record, he was asked, did you ask Special Agent Spring what inferences could be drawn from these titles? And he responded, yes, he did, that he asked that of Special Agent Spring, that Special Agent Spring could draw the inferences because of the experience and the cases he's been involved in, that Special Agent Spring could look at those titles and then determine that they were pornographic in nature. And there's a number of other instances, for example, on page 63 of the record and page 74 of the record, where, again, the military magistrate is basing his probable cause determination on the inferences that are being drawn by the special agent, Your Honor.
Well, is he, or is he only doing what you said he could do, which is to give way to the experience and training of the special agent in this kind of case?
He can do that, Your Honor, but at the end of the day, ultimately, he needs to take that additional step that's...
And you're saying he didn't do it?
Correct, Your Honor.
Do you think if the information in the statement comes in that you need special training to draw a particular inference from the names of these titles? Do you think a magistrate might be able to draw his or her own inference from titles such as these?
There's certainly a greater, I think the magistrate's certainly in a better position to do that, Your Honor, as opposed to if that information from the statement had not come.
What weight, if any, should we give to the fact that in the military judge's findings, if I'm not mistaken, she did not find or specify the titles? Is that helpful or hurtful to your case? And what conclusions should we draw from that?
That the military judge did not discuss the actual names of the titles, Your Honor?
Roger.
I think, well, in the military judge's findings of fact, she did mention, obviously, the main, I believe, Your Honor, the in paragraph.
The 14-year-old Filipino girl, but.
Yes, Your Honor.
But there's a distinction between the affidavit and the statement as to the granularity of what was indicated by the other files.
Yes, Your Honor.
And I think there's some interest here in whether that's an important distinction.
But yes, I think it is very important, Your Honor.
And I'm offering you the opportunity, with reference to the military judge's findings, to indicate to what extent that's helpful or hurtful to your argument.
I think it's particularly helpful, Your Honor. The military magistrate, or the military judge, did mention obviously 14-year-old Filipino girl, and then she did mention some files that describe ages and acts, but noticeably absent from her findings of fact was other information that was contained in that written statement from the 17th of March. So I think what could be drawn from that is that perhaps the military judge made the finding of fact that the military magistrate did not consider that additional information that was in the statement. And I see that my time is up, if I may briefly.
You'll have an opportunity for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll now hear from counsel for the amicus.
May it please the court. Your Honors, good afternoon. My name is Carrie Scheibel, and I represent the amicus here, the University of Pittsburgh School of Law, in arguing on behalf of the appellant, Airman Leedy's position in this case. The presented issue here is one of utmost importance to Americans in the wake of recent reports of government violations of search warrants. How much information is enough to warrant probable cause to issue a search warrant? The facts in Airman Leedy's case do not point to a finding of probable cause. I will show probable cause did not exist in this case for the following reasons. First, as appellant counsel mentioned, unlike any other case law that we could find, neither the witness roommate nor Special Agent Spring actually saw the images that that formed the basis for the search warrant. This lack of visual confirmation leads to our second point, which is that the affidavit submitted to Colonel Byers contained only conclusory statements, which have been clearly rejected as grounds for probable cause by this court and other courts of appeal.
Can I ask you the question that I asked appellant's counsel, which is, you know, you're focusing on whether or not someone saw the actual photos or described the actual photos. Do you think that that is what is necessary for there to be probable cause?
This court in United States versus Monroe cited that case as a close case, that there was a bare-bones affidavit. And in that case, somebody had actually seen the photographs. So, yes, we would contend that if that case is a close case, where the photographs were actually seen, there were images actually seen, then this case steps beyond that line.
But wasn't Monroe a close case not because of the way in which it was described, as opposed to whether anyone had seen the photos or not, whether the way in which the photos were described was sufficiently indicative of criminal photographs? I thought that was the reason that was a close case.
That is true, but at the same time, the photographs were still described in here, and in this affidavit, there was absolutely no description because there couldn't be a description of the photographs because they were not seen. So if that description was insufficient, then a lack of description must completely be insufficient.
So is your answer to my question whether you need to have a photograph, yes? Either a photograph or description of what the photograph would show as opposed to a title?
Yes, that is our position.
The titles are pretty graphic. If the statement comes in.
I'm sorry, could you repeat
that? The titles are pretty graphic, the ones that are referenced, if the statement is part of the record that we're reviewing and not just the affidavit. How do you address that?
Unfortunately, I did not see the record, so I do not know the exact extent of these titles, but it would be our position that based on the fact that Airman... Sorry, that the roommate did not see the photographs. He really had no way to determine. It's very possible that it was legal pornography. The 14-year-old Filipino girl did not necessarily denote that it was child pornography. It could have simply been a project he was working on.
What about the fact that According to the statement and the affidavit, it was sandwiched between files that were described as pornographic.
It would be our contention that the way that Windows Media Player works is that you can save different files at different times. It's very possible that Airman Leedy had viewed pornographic material, which is completely legal, and then later looked at another file that had nothing to do with child pornography, but the files would be all sandwiched in there together. So there is, in our view, there would be no probable cause for that without actual knowledge of what the pictures or movies contain.
So you're arguing basically for a per se rule, that there has to, somebody actually has to look at the stuff for probable cause to exist.
Based on what on our view of what U.S. versus Monroe said, that was a close case, we would say that the court here should draw the line at that point, that yes, descriptions are okay, images are okay, but when there's a lack of either, that should not constitute probable cause.
Counsel, I'll try to, go ahead.
No, I just, is that, can you harmonize that with Illinois v. Gates and the general description, you know, which is a pretty loose description of probable cause?
Yes. It is our contention that basically you cannot have probable cause if you are not sure of what you're even looking at. In our view, the magistrate had no idea. These titles could have been anything but pornography. Even if the statement were to come in, when looking at the affidavit as we saw it, which was the only thing that we saw, I'm not entirely sure what the statement would have said. But looking at the affidavit, which I believe the magistrate definitely had in front of him, there was not enough there to have probable cause because there was no description of the images because they had never been seen.
Counsel, it seems that you're arguing a per se rule that if they haven't seen the pictures and described them, there isn't going to be sufficient probable cause, which is a pretty harsh rule. What about the situation where the witness, where Winkler, says, I saw these titles, and the special agent gets up and testifies, in my experience, I am familiar with these titles, and these titles are titles that represent images of child pornography. Would that be, that's not this case, but would that be sufficient?
No, it would not be. While this court said in United States versus Gallo that you should look at the special agent's experience and his knowledge of the matter, in that case, then Chief Judge Crawford was very careful to point out that in addition to the affiant's experience, other factors bolster the opinion. So it should be one factor. And yes, it is given weight, but it should not be the deciding factor as it appeared to have been here.
So there's no exception in your view. If they haven't seen the pictures and if they can't describe them, there's no probable cause.
Yes.
Well, in terms of the per se rule, I'll try not to get graphic here. Suppose we have a file folder entitled Pictures That Make Me Feel Good. And then you have 100 files in there. And each one of those files has a gender, an age, and a particular sexual act. No expert. All you have is an ordinary member of the law enforcement community bringing that list of titles before the magistrate. Why isn't that sufficient for the magistrate to conclude that on that computer there's child pornography when there are 100 titles that describe underage children, their gender, and a particular sexual act, with nobody ever having seen the actual picture? That's not this case, but amicus is asking us to have a per se rule, and I'm testing that per se rule.
I think that maybe that would be a good exception for it. If you have a sufficient enough description of the acts, that you have the age set with the acts, but here, as far as I know, at least from the affidavit, again, I'm unsure about the statement, you had a 14-year-old Filipino girl. You didn't have anything about any acts that she might have committed. You have nothing of any sexual nature there. The other title was 3 black men and 1 woman. Again, no sexual acts are there.
One white girl, not one woman.
One white girl, sorry. The acts are not there.
Now, you left this open in your footnote, so I just want to make clear, and I understand there's a certain bifurcation in the process, but you put Eckerd on the table, which was a title-only scenario, and you distinguished it from your case, but you did not disown it. So I'm testing whether you are standing by your statement that there's a per se rule that titles don't work. And then I want you to comment on your page 7. You say these titles do not unequivocally suggest that they contain pornographic materials. And you can put extra emphasis on unequivocally or suggest. Unequivocally indicate there's pornography is one test. Unequivocally suggest something, anything can suggest something, depending on who you are. Do you think these titles suggest pornography?
Well, in response to your first question about Eikert, I believe that we distinguished it by saying that there was a lot more evidence there. There were 100 newsgroup listings, including newsgroups regarding teens, preteens, sex,
I understand.
Children.
I understand. What I'm testing here is whether your position is titles never work, never amount to probable cause, or it depends, and this case is not Eikert.
I think that titles with a sufficient description of the age and sexual activities might be enough. And again, that's not the issue in this case because that's not the facts as I know them based on the affidavit. However, here, because there wasn't enough of a description, it would not have amounted to probable cause. But yes, I think that per se rule should include something about an age and acts.
Okay, and I understand I gave you a compound question and you're over out of time, but do you wish to clarify what you mean? Is this the legal test you hope that we apply? These titles do not unequivocally suggest that they contain pornographic materials?
And please take the time you need to answer the question.
I mean, probable cause is a fair probability of something, not an unequivocal. So what test, I'm just asking you to clarify, what test do you hope we apply when we step back? Because probable cause is lots of, you can look at different cases for different propositions, common sense, whatever. I'm asking you to pony up what you hope we put on the table as our statement of law.
I think that perhaps unequivocally is a bit strong. I think that this court has already found that totality of the circumstances, common sense, would rule the day, and that is why the military judge erred in her, why the magistrate erred here, because common sense-wise, you would not look at 14-year-old Filipino girl and assume that it automatically meant child pornography.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your argument today. Counsel for the government.
May it please the court. I'm Major Matthew Ward, and I, along with Major Kamani Eason, represent the United States in this matter today. The military judge did not abuse her discretion in finding that the military magistrate had a substantial basis to find probable cause to search appellant's computer. However, even if this court were to determine that she abused her considerable discretion, the images of child pornography would still be admissible under the good faith exception. The standard of review for this court is whether or not is to review the judge's determination under an abuse of discretion standard. That requires more than a difference of opinion. It requires more than this court going back and just saying this is how we would have ruled. What matters is the judge arrive at based her decision on an erroneous view of the law or clearly erroneous facts. She did not.
Counsel, one of the issues that's come up today during the argument several times is what was properly before the military judge when the military judge was reviewing the magistrate's determination. And I think generally the rule is that the military judge will review what the magistrate had before he or she in making that decision. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
The CCA adopted the military judge's findings, and I take it the government doesn't have any quarrel with those findings on appeal?
No, sir.
One of the questions that we're dealing with is whether or not the statement of Winkler that was presented to the military judge that contained the statements that dealt with, I saw movies similar to this on the list alleging ages of subjects, along with other movie titles describing other pornographic acts, such as, and then gave a specific example. And the question has come before us as to whether or not that was before the magistrate, when the magistrate made the determination, his determination, and whether or not it was appropriate for the military judge to consider that. And as I look at the military judge's findings in the conclusions of law, and I guess I should say conclusions of law, number one, the military judge said all of Airman First Class Winkler's information was presented to Colonel Byers in the affidavit by Special Agent Springs. This information was not in the affidavit. So what are we to make of that statement?
Well, I guess there is an appearance of a conflict in that I believe in her findings of fact she indicated that presented also to the magistrate were the fact that their titles contained acts and ages.
Well, just to be clear, and also he did not clearly remember the name of any other files.
Yes, sir.
But isn't that a different question that we're dealing with here? In the findings of fact, the military judge may well have been relying on this statement, but that doesn't answer the question as to whether that statement was before the magistrate.
I believe it was a reasonable inference. It was the.
Well, how can you make a reasonable inference when she says that all of the information that Winkler presented was in the affidavit, and this wasn't in the affidavit?
Well, we know from the record that there was a 20 to 30 minute conversation. We also know from the record that the magistrate Colonel Byers reviewed the affidavit. I guess to the extent of, because it's...
Well, if you could point something in the record to me where either Colonel Byers, the magistrate, or Airman Springs discussed this in the 20 to 30 minute discussion, that would satisfy my question, but I haven't been able to find that testimony.
Yes, sir. I believe it. You'd have to draw what we believe is a reasonable inference in the record at 74. Colonel Byers mentions that other file names contain pornography. It also mentioned that the record at page 72. At the record at page 73, Colonel Byers talks about other titles that Winkler saw, and then the fact that he's indicated that he asked questions about the context of, you know, where these files were located, but there's nothing in the record specifically that states the other acts or other ages.
And under the government's theory, we're supposed to ignore this statement in the conclusions of law of the military judge, which would appear to limit the information that was before the magistrate to what was in the affidavit.
Yes, I believe based on her findings of fact, the apparent conflict between that, I believe it's an inartfully worded statement in her conclusions of law.
Then let me try the findings of fact. Is the finding of fact that that he did not clearly remember the name of any other files other than 14-year-old Filipino girl, is that a clearly erroneous finding of fact? Do we have before us the comments in the statement indicating a specific title, blank, blank, banged by?
No, we do not, sir.
So that's not part of the information before us?
I would...
It's either before us, and this is clearly erroneous, or this isn't clearly erroneous.
I would submit that there's, I hate to use this term, but some sort of gray area with regard to when she says clearly remembers, because there was actually also some confusion regarding...
In the government's view, when we consider the factors, the totality of the circumstances in determining probable cause, should we or should we not be considering that specific title?
It's government's position you can consider that title.
Then you just said you had no quarrel with the judge's findings. And one of the judge's findings was that he didn't remember that title.
Specifically, I guess it's a matter of interpretation. She did not say that he did not remember that title. She indicated that everything was either in the affidavit or that he did not clearly remember other titles. It's the government's position that you can... That there was no evidence... That specific title did not come out during Colonel Byers' testimony, did not come out during Special Agent Springs' testimony. Whether it occurred between Colonel Byers and Special Agent Springs, it's the government's position that it's a reasonable inference given from the fact that it was information that Airman Winkler says he conveyed to the special agent, and they had this 20 to 30 minute conversation, of which Colonel Byers references at least three times they discussed the context and the other names mentioned, other titles, which led Airman Winkler to believe they were pornographic. But however, even if you don't consider what was in the statement, the government's position, there's a substantial basis just based on the affidavit and the testimony of Colonel Byers.
Let's assume that statement comes in. Whose burden is it to prove that it demonstrates the presence of child pornography at that point? Isn't it the government's burden at trial?
At trial, yes, we would have the burden to prove child pornography.
So the statement says, after the reference to the 14-year-old Filipino, I remember seeing other movies similar to this on the list, detailing ages of subjects along with other movie titles describing other pornographic acts such as, and then a title is given. I don't see anything in that statement that refers to child pornography. Wasn't it the government's burden to demonstrate that what Winkler was talking about there was child pornography versus permissibly obtained adult pornography?
So
with respect to ages of subjects, doesn't say children. Other movie titles containing pornographic acts, doesn't say children. The specific title that's referenced here has no reference to age at all. Why wasn't it the government's burden at trial, if this information was to be considered, to demonstrate that each one of those phrases pertained to child pornography?
I guess I'm not understanding. You reference our burden at trial to establish the guilt of the accused, or?
No, to establish that this is at trial in the motion, in response to the defense motion to suppress. Isn't it the government's burden to demonstrate that there was probable cause?
Yes, sir, but that requires...
And in terms of demonstrating probable cause, wasn't it the government's burden to demonstrate that those aspects of Winkler's statement referring to child pornography?
No, sir, I don't believe it was. I believe reasonable inference is all the burden on the government. We don't have to prove that child porn, just that it was a fair inference or a reasonable inference that child pornography would be found on his computer.
But you had the government had the magistrate on the stand.
Correct, sir.
Why isn't it the government's burden at that point to say, if we're going to consider all this information from Winkler that may or may not have been spoken to the magistrate, that first of all, that the magistrate was aware of it, and secondly, that each one of those subjects relates to child pornography? Because if you look at the statement on the face of it, ages of subjects and other movie titles, there's no distinction there between child pornography and otherwise permissible pornography.
I believe that if you look at it all in context, with regard to these images, these titles were found on a media player, which indicates they were viewed or perhaps listened to, though more likely viewed in the government's opinion. And if in the context of those, if they describe, if there's nine names on there, six of them describe sexual acts and one of them has 14-year-old girl, that could be an innocent 14-year-old girl. I think the defense in the brief says 14-year-old Filipino girl survives tsunami. That's a possibility, but given the fact of the context, the surrounding files, and that they were pornographic in nature, it's a reasonable inference that 14-year-old, that title reference in a 14-year-old girl is also pornographic.
So the government's inference is that if the reference is to a 14-year-old girl and all those other items were in fact adult pornography, that then supports the inference that the 14-year-old girl is pornography.
Yes, Your Honor.
And on what do you base that inference in terms of any expertise as to the location of the files or how the files were organized?
Well, with regard to Colonel Byers' testimony, he indicated that he spoke to Special Agent Springs, and that was a context. He asked the question, how do you know a 14-year-old Filipino girl is pornographic? And he indicated that in his experience, that especially in Springs indicated that in his experience, in some cases he's had, and the evidence that those types of titles taken in context of the information they got from Winkler was that they could be pornographic in nature. So in other words, he did rely on the expertise of Special Agent Springs saying 14-year-old Filipino girl is a title that can be and has been associated in his experience with pornography. And
so if the title had been young girl, would that be the same?
I think it's still, you could draw a reasonable inference. It wouldn't be as strong an inference as 14-year-old girl.
And if it said teen angel, that would be the same?
I would think so, yes, sir, because
young girl, teen angel, baby love?
Yes, sir. Lolita would be another example.
I think if anybody of a certain generation was downloading music, they'd have a real problem then, because those are all
love.
Popular songs for the 1960s.
That's not my realm of expertise, sir. So.
What about along that same line, as part of the record, there's the media analysis of certain of the files
that
are eventually located. And some of the files have such names as, have to pick carefully here. I will omit certain information, but let's say one of them says underage teen sex with a certain act omitted. And the media analysis indicates that the government's media analysis, that is in fact a mature image, meaning someone who's overage, not underage.
Yes, sir.
There are a number of Lolita references that are either undetermined, mature, or immature, covering the range. Is that part of what the record that we should be considering, and how does that inform whether we should view a title alone suggestive of pornography or suggestive of underage pornography? Doesn't that undercut the notion that just because it says underage teen or whatever, it's in fact underage teen?
No, sir, because the burden on the government is not to prove that it is. It's not even we have to prove by preponderance that it is. It just has to be a reasonable inference. In other words, the government doesn't have to exclude every other reasonable inference. Baby Love could refer to a song, but the fact that it would be on a media player and it was surrounded by other titles suggestive, perhaps more suggestive of sex, would indicate that it may well not be Baby Love. But even that's not the standard. The standard is it a reasonable inference, a fair inference based on all the facts, that it could be, not that it must be, that it could be child pornography. And we believe that in the context of seeming of Springs, especially in Springs' testimony and Colonel Byers' testimony, that burden was met.
Could means any possibility?
It has to be a fair possibility.
Fair possibility.
Fair probability, same thing.
Yes, sir.
Counsel, focusing, if you would, just on the evidence that we actually know was presented to the magistrate, that we know that the magistrate relied on in making the probable cause determination for this affidavit, can you make your best argument, please, based just on the affidavit from the special agent and his discussion with Colonel Byer, how you meet the probable cause standard that you just described? Focusing just on that information, not later media analysis, not statements that were made after the probable cause determination was made.
Yes, ma'am. The information that Colonel Byers knew was that the appellant had arranged his room for privacy, that it was a young male. Colonel Byers would know that he would be unmarried and that he was living in the dorms, and that his roommate, who had no axe to grind, and that was explored both by the special agent and by Colonel Byers, who took the time to call the commander of both, indicated that he saw these titles and he could only remember one or two, depending, based on the authorization, 14-year-old Filipino girl and the other title, and presented that to Colonel Byers. Colonel Byers discussed it and said, based on the experiences relayed by Special Agent Springs, that, again, Special Agent Springs said in some cases he's had, and the evidence that those type of titles taken in context, that the information they got from Winkler was that could be pornographic in nature. That is enough to raise a reasonable probability, a fair probability, that child porn was on his computer, which is the only standard that the government has to meet in order for this evidence to come in.
Okay, let's say, and I'm not suggesting that this is a case, but let's say someone does not agree with that position. in terms of the special agent's good faith, what weight, if any, should we give to the fact that he consulted with a judge advocate before creating his affidavit and going to the magistrate?
I believe we should give it great weight.
And why is that?
Because it shows that he is trying to, at his best, to comply with the law. He's a special agent. He's not an expert in the law. He's not an expert in probable cause, probably. So he's conferring with an expert saying, this is what I have. Do I have enough? He's relying on the government expert or the legal expert to say, no, you need to get more or you don't need to get more. He has no training. I don't know what else he could have done. I mean, theoretically, he could have disagreed with the legal office, with the lawyer, and said, no, I think I need to get more. But he was going for a sanity check, a credibility check, a legal check, and he got the go-ahead from a legal expert that he had enough. And furthermore, when he goes to Colonel Byers, who's the magistrate, he's entitled to rely, I think Gates talks about it, is a police officer is entitled to rely on a magistrate's ruling, just as he's entitled to rely, in my opinion, on a JAG's ruling, because he's not a lawyer. He goes, this is what I have. Do I need to do more or do I not need to do more? And if both the magistrate and the legal advisor prior to that say, no, you've got enough, I think that's ample evidence of good faith.
Going back to the issue prior when people were asking you questions about the later affidavit of the roommate and later media analysis, do you have a case? It seemed to me that you were suggesting that those things possibly could be considered by this court. And I'm wondering if you have a case in support of that proposition.
No, ma'am, I don't. That's based solely on the fact that...
That it would be helpful to your position?
Not solely based on that. We acknowledge it would be. But again, the burden is on the defense under Gallo and under MRE 311G2, I believe, that with regard to false statements or anything like that, the burden is on the defense to challenge those statements and to lay forth a case in which point there would be a hearing, I believe, and the government could rebut it. Since the defense did not do that, I don't think they should be availed of the benefit of saying, okay, we sat on our hands, and so now we should get every inference because we failed to meet our burden.
On the military judge's findings, the military judge states he did not clearly remember the name of any other files, but did recall that some mentioned ages and some mentioned acts. Should we infer when it says some mention ages that the ages are underage, overage, or just ages? Is that a fact, finding a fact helpful to the government, neutral, hurtful, etc.?
I believe in a reasonable inference based on common sense is the only time I suspect an age would be relevant with regard to porn would be if it were underage. I don't know if I guess theoretically a 25-year-old might be a factor, but I guess just based on my experience in prosecuting and defending these cases, it tends to be, ages tend to be...
What in this should give us a sense as to what the judge is referring to?
I think a reasonable inference is that the age are relevant because it's a child porn case, therefore a reasonable inference from that statement and her findings of fact is that it was mentioned under ages that were under the 18.
And I hope appellant will address the same question in rebuttal. Thank you.
We discussed with both defense counsel and the amicus the question of a per se rule. My question now is, are we considering a per se rule on the other area, and that is with respect to the presence of pornography on an individual's computer? There have been many debates in society and in the law about pornography, but under current Supreme Court precedents, pornography that doesn't rise to the level of obscenity is permissible to be retained by adults. Is the government asking for a rule in which, if on the face of a list of computer files, there is pornography, no indication that it's child pornography, and if there is a title somewhere that refers to an adolescent, and that title is not itself referring to pornography or sexual acts, but it just refers to an adolescent, that in any such case, a person who has pornography on their computer is then subject to having that computer seized for a child pornography search.
No, sir, I don't believe, because it is a totality of the circumstances test, I don't believe it's amenable to any per se rule on either side.
Then how do we write this opinion up from the government's perspective and not have a per se rule that comes out of it when, in this case, we have pornography on the computer if the statement comes in, and we have references in a non-pornographic sense to a child?
Well, again, I would think, because it would be the same thing as if someone, in a drug case, for example, if someone had gone into a known location, a known house or something that had drug activity, and the person has a right, obviously, to go into that house. But I think that is a factor that can be considered. The same way is whether the person has adult porn or not. There's nothing that prohibits it under the First Amendment or anything else from being considered as part of the totality of the circumstances. So my suggestion...
But my question is, in your view, totality of the circumstances, presence of pornography plus the reference in a non-pornographic sense to a child in a file title. Is that sufficient to warrant seizure of that computer?
Well, it certainly was in this case, and I would argue that it's definitely part of the totality of the circumstances, so it may well be in many cases.
Any case in which it wouldn't be?
I hate to do the defense work for them, but...
No, I'm asking in terms of whether this case is going to result in a rule to that effect.
I can't think of a case off the top of my head, sir. But again, I don't necessarily see there being a rule that comes out of here other than the fact that it gets the totality of the circumstances, and there's no per se rule that you have to look at images. And I mean, the case law doesn't support that at all, nor does the understanding of the totality of the circumstances test. That just means you look at everything. There's no, if you start saying that you have to have X or every time X plus Y equals totality of the circumstances, I think that undermines the nature of the test, which is using common sense, and in one situation something may not be indicative of a crime, in another case it may well be.
In the system of precedents, totality of circumstances doesn't mean everything goes. In any case, though, precedents do have a significant effect in how subsequent cases will be decided.
Certainly, and I would agree that if this court does decide that you can look at all this stuff, it would have an impact. But I don't believe the rule is per se that if you ever have this circumstance, then automatically you're going to meet the burden for a substantial basis.
Counsel, would it make a difference to your argument in this case if the investigator who wrote the affidavit was more like the investigator in United States versus Brunet, who had less than 2 years of experience, and it was only the second child pornography case that he'd been involved in?
Well, I believe that's a factor, but the government would distinguish Brunet more by the fact that in the First Circuit they do a de novo review of probable cause. So it's our position that what they did is where this court doesn't go back and say this is what we would have liked to have seen if we'd been the magistrate. In the First Circuit, that's what they do. It's all de novo review.
Okay, well, do you think that it should play a little part, a medium part, or a large part in our review of the facts looked at by the magistrate, that the affidavit was from a special agent who had a long time and long standing experience with investigation of exactly the offenses that he was looking into here?
I think it should play a large role, because he was an instructor. This is what he conveyed to the magistrate. He'd instructed on this issue, he had forensic background, and he was arguably, based on what he said in his affidavit, he could qualify as an expert in almost any court as an expert in this area, or expert in computer analysis regarding child porn. So I believe that is a large factor, and this court has determined that you can rely on the experience of experts to fill in gaps or to make otherwise maybe not intuitive decisions. In other words, it may not be intuitive that someone who would have child porn at work would have it at home, but this court has found, I think, in Gallo that you can make that leap based on an expert saying, yes, the people who collect child porn tend to keep it at home as well. In this case, it may not be intuitive that 14-year-old Filipino girl is pornographic necessarily, but I believe that the magistrate could rely on the expertise of the special agent to say, yes, this is a title that has been associated with child porn in my experience.
Is there anything that would have prevented him, or is there anything in the record that reflects whether or not he typed this in his own computer and saw what he got?
I'm sorry.
Did he put this in his own computer and see what he got?
I don't understand. understand that.
If he heard these titles from Winkler, is there anything as a matter of law that would have prevented him from going back to the OSI shop and typing them in and seeing what pulled up on the internet?
Oh, a search?
No, not a search. Not his own computer. He's going to search his own computer using Google.
Correct.
Did he do that?
The special agent? No, sir.
Yeah. Is there anything that would have prevented him from doing that as a matter of law?
No, sir, other than the fact
I'm not suggesting it's required or not. I'm just asking in terms of experience and so on.
No, there was nothing that prevents him from doing that, just as there's nothing that prevents the magistrate from conducting his own investigation, except he may have endangered his neutral standing. But
and just to be clear, did I hear you say that he stated this title was associated with child porn or titles like this were associated with child porn?
Let me check, Serge. I don't want to mislead the court. I believe it's those type of titles taken.
Okay.
With regard to the good faith exception, I just want to read a quote out of United States v. Leon, and that's in states that in cases where an officer acting in good faith has obtained a warrant from a magistrate and acted within its scope, there is no police illegality and nothing to deter. It is the magistrate's responsibility to determine whether the officer's allegations establish probable cause, and if so, to issue a warrant comporting in form with the requirements of the Fourth Amendment. In the ordinary case, an officer cannot be expected to question the magistrate's PC determination or judgment that the form is technically sufficient. Once the warrant issues, there is literally nothing more the policeman can do in seeking to comply with the law. Penalizing the officer for the magistrate's error rather than his own cannot logically contribute to the deterrence of Fourth Amendment violations. So even should this court determine that there was not a substantial basis, this evidence should still come in under the good faith exception.
Should we take into account in assessing the good faith exception the typical circumstance in the military environment where the magistrate is not a lawyer or legally trained, but is typically the commander who has a law enforcement interest?
Well, with regard to good faith, since it's seen through the eyes of the, in this case, the special agent, as opposed to us looking backwards, it's how much reliance is the special agent entitled to put in the magistrate? I believe that would be much less of a factor, since I don't believe the special agent knows exactly the extent of the training the magistrate receives, and he's entitled to rely on the fact that this individual has been trained.
It's irrelevant in your view.
Of minimal value. If there are no further questions, I'll conclude. For the reasons stated, the military judge did not abuse her discretion. The military magistrate had a substantial basis to allow this evidence in, to authorize the search, and the military judge did not abuse her discretion in allowing the evidence in. Even if she had done so, though, this evidence would still come in under the good faith exception. There's simply no police misconduct to deter. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have rebuttal?
Referencing the military judge's findings of fact, in particular that Cameron Winkler noticed a list of files that led him to believe child pornography, and that one of the files he remembered was specifically 14-year-old Filipino girl. We do not believe that those particular findings of fact are clearly erroneous. And so if based on the military judge's findings of fact...
What about the next sentence?
That he did not clearly remember the names of any...
But did recall that some mentioned ages and some mentioned acts. Same question that we had for government counsel. Should we infer by that that ages means under ages, over ages, any ages?
I think it's difficult to draw any particular inference from it, Your Honor. And so that my response to your question would be that this court should not draw a particular inference that necessarily is in referring to underage individuals.
Are any of these findings of fact clearly erroneous in your view?
Well, with respect to whether or not the military magistrate considered whether, if the military judge and those in the findings of fact in paragraph 1 was indicating that the military magistrate did consider the statement that there were other ages and other acts, that we would submit that that was clearly erroneous, just based on
conclusion of law number 1.
In paragraph 1 of the findings of fact, Your Honor, where the military magistrate or the military judge, one of the particular sentences says Winkler recalled some of the files mentioned ages and some mentioned acts.
Oh, check. Okay.
And so, based on the military judge's findings of fact, that information being provided to the magistrate did not provide the magistrate with a substantial basis to determine probable cause. As we mentioned previously, that information did not allow the magistrate to, as the Supreme Court mentioned in PJ Video, focus searchingly on the question of illegality. Or as described in the court in United States versus Brunette, it also did not allow the military magistrate to basically make a considered judgment as to what those images actually consisted of.
Assuming there's no probable cause, how do you answer the government's good faith contention?
Yes, Your Honor. As respect to the good faith exception to the exclusionary rule, we submit that the affidavit in this case was facially deficient. With respect to Special Agent Springer,
was so lacking in indicia of probable cause as to render official belief entirely unreasonable? That's pretty substantial standard.
Yes, Your Honor.
You think it reached that depth?
We do, Your Honor. With respect to looking at that from the perspective of a reasonable law enforcement agent, Your Honor, particularly in the case with Special Agent Spring, obviously there's been reference to his experience. If anything, that experience should have indicated to Special Agent Spring that additional investigative efforts were needed in order to put together this affidavit.
Are you saying that because Spring was so experienced and this was all he could come up with, therefore it's just facially bad?
Only in that Special Agent Spring's experience should have triggered the need for him to conduct additional investigative steps.
So can you tell me what precisely the police misconduct would be in this case that we would be seeking to deter if we agreed with you that the good faith exception did not apply?
What is the police misconduct that would be being deterred, Your Honor? Essentially, a law enforcement agent putting together a facially deficient affidavit, Your Honor. Basically, putting together an affidavit that, for example, made no effort to corroborate Winkler's suspicions, that essentially made no effort to describe any particular images, that provided no information that, for example, the characteristics relating to those involved with child pornography that was included in the affidavit, making no effort to in any way tie those in or demonstrating that they applied to Airman Leedy in this case. Not clarifying whether this was actually a graphic or a video file as opposed to an audio file. Those types of aspects of the affidavit that were lacking, Your Honor, is why in this particular case it was facially deficient. Based on the fact that there was not a substantial basis to determine probable cause in this case, and because, as well, the affidavit was facially deficient, the findings and sentence in this case should be set aside.
Thank you, counsel. And we thank counsel for both parties for your presentation today, as well as counsel for the amicus. In a few moments, the clerk will recess our proceedings. And when he does, the judges will remain on the bench for an informal question and answer session. And we welcome your questions at that point on any subject except for today's case. So with that note, I'll ask the clerk to recess the court until tomorrow, when we will convene at Duquesne School of Law for another proceeding.
All rise. The court stands adjourned until further order of the court.